And you bring up, Albuquerque. I don't know if you have statewide numbers, if you, if you can talk about development statewide.
There's as
No.
far as I know, there's no numbers.
Right.
You'd have to go to each specific
Community.
planning person,
Okay.
because they're the ones that deal with permits.
Right.
And you'd have to ask them, well, what's the increase maybe over the last 5 years?
Okay.
And they could probably tell you, well, in this area it's increased this much.
Okay.
But overall, I'm willing to lay money that, we've experienced increases in New Mexico. Overall, yes. I mean, there's, and see that type of development fuels the economy in these small towns, So you have to, you have to strike a balance between development, but you still have to have people work and support their families and do what they need to do to survive. Because, New Mexico is a poor state. I mean, it doesn't, you go to Albuquerque, it doesn't seem like it is because it's a bustling, hustling city. But I mean, New Mexico is a poor state, and the northern counties in New Mexico have always had these high unemployment rates. And if you come to Taos and you pay for gasoline, I mean, you're paying very, very high prices. So you need to take all these factors into consideration and come up with new and innovative strategies so that no one's hurt in any type of way, but that you're doing something good for the environment and for the economy. Now, I go to several board meetings a year nationwide with my job, soil and water conservation. And we were in Idaho in June of last year, 2006. And that was the first thing that was coming out of everybody's agenda, was that the growth, the unprecedented growth in Boise and around Boise, Idaho, and the fracturing, of traditional farmland that was used for farming is now being used for homes. So even in Idaho, you have that. I talked to people in the southeast part of the country, the Carolinas and Georgia and North Carolina, South Carolina, in the other areas like that, and they're experiencing growing pains as well. So, when you have farmland that you're making, someone's leasing it and paying you $700 an acre, and then a developer's going to go in there and pay you $100,000 an acre so that they can, develop. I mean, what's the person to do? I mean, especially if he's old and he's farmed it all his life, and now he needs to think about, what's he going to do? And maybe the kids don't want to take over the farm, or he doesn't have anybody to take over the farm. It seems like it's not a difficult decision to maybe retire. And I think that, part of that strategy on a nationwide basis should be some type of incentive that keeps these open spaces open. And, people have talked before about tax breaks and things like that. We need something more tangible than a tax break. We need an education process that encourages people to appreciate their surroundings and to learn how everything is sort of connected together. And that is a nationwide awareness. And on top of that, then you need to put all our heads together, and then you need the government, okay, to step in and to create incentives in the wallet that allow people to keep land undeveloped. And that isn't there now. But I would think that would probably be a logical course. I mean, and maybe somebody, out there thinks I'm crazy, but I mean, I don't know of any other way of addressing the issue of, land fragmentation other than using the marketplace as it's being used now to develop, to actually create more open spaces and sustainable communities. And that Urban Land Institute has some really neat, books and things like that on just exactly what I'm talking about.
And those ideas and more strategies to do that. Okay. And I wanted to also talk about water.
Okay.
Find out how water's been impacted by
Okay.
the development. Can you I know I say y'all have done a lot of work with the acequias and trying to preserve those because I think there were problems before, weren't there, with development and building on?
You know that the Aseca system goes back, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And it is literally part of the ecosystem because you live, well, we live here in a high desert. And the growing season is very short. Okay, you have a long winter. You're at a higher altitude. So, you know, when you look at communities today that have Aseca systems, that's why you have these riparian areas that are established around those Aseca systems. And that's what draws people to those communities. And what draws people to those communities is, you know, the wildlife, the birds, the sound of the water, the refreshing cleanliness of that. And, you know, Asecas contribute to that. Now, they've always been bombarded over the years on all sides by entities and individuals that are trying to fracture that system and divide and conquer it. And therefore, put it out to the highest bidder once that takes place. And we've seen that over historical times in this area of the United States. The only thing is that, like I said before, we have an awareness about Asecas in New Mexico and Southern Colorado. And we love them. And we understand that they are a connection of us to the land. And when you have that connection, you haven't lost that connection, you realize the importance of your environment and the importance of the Aseca system. So we have advocates for it. The powers that be, statewide and local governments, usually tend to help to sustain Asecas. So it's sort of like a no-brainer in the area of the country that we live in. Now, that being said, that doesn't mean that the threat's gone. I mean, water is a very scarce commodity in the southwestern United States. And it is growing in value. So what your listeners might want to ponder is that we need to take the commodification out of the surface water in order to perpetuate or to advance our thinking as far as sustainability and balance with the environment. And that's the first thing.
And how do you do that?
Well, you get up and go to a meeting and tell them you don't want them to take your water. That would be the first. And then you participate in your water. The Aseca system is real neat because, I mean, it allows landowners to put on their boots and get their shovel and go out and do some good physical labor to keep themselves healthy as well as keep the ditch healthy. It allows them to have a community where you talk with other people that are other members of your community on that Aseca as you're cleaning it. It allows governments, because the Aseca system also has a set of democratic rules. Now, it's not perfect, but it allows all these things that I guess I was taught when I was growing up in this country, this part of the country, you know, that we had these certain unalienable rights, right? And the democratic Aseca governance was one of those. Being good to the environment, growing your own food, and participating in that sort of brings us all together and sort of keeps us close to the land. Now, as far as development goes for the Aseca system, well, yes, I mean, all the time you find threats from development. You find unknowledgeable or ignorant people putting developments in next to Asecas and moving Asecas without consenting, you know, the Aseca Commission or the neighborhood. You find the total abandonment of Asecas and then ditches being shut down over time because of development. You know, as individuals have become disenfranchised from growing their own food and taking care of the land, they see no importance in the Aseca system. They think of it as more of a chore. Now, if you talk to an old timer, like, you know, a lot of my people that I work with are old farmers. They fought in world wars. They fought in other modern wars. They came home and the Aseca was a therapy that taught them that or showed them how to heal themselves through working with the land. And, I'll bring them into my office and we'll talk about, a particular project that they want assistance with. And, you talk about the ditch and their eyes light up, and they know how important it is. Now, some of the children of those people, they have that same spark. But a lot of the newer generation, there's a disenfranchisement there. There's a severed connection there. And they don't feel it is as important. Now, what's neat, though, is that we have an influx of people coming into our areas that are coming to our areas specifically because they want open space and they want to get back closer to the land, and they're coming from urban areas and doing that. And I see that as a positive because I see people that are caring and willing to come into the Aseca. They might not be born here or from here, but they realize that the Aseca is important, and that realization might be what saves the Aseca system. Because it's going to be a one generational or two generational passing on of the torch. And if you don't have anybody to pass that torch to, then the threats to that system become more paramount. However, if you have people coming to this area and wanting to use the Aseca and loving the whole Aseca concept, I mean, there is someone to pass the torch to. And hopefully we can have that younger generation come back and realize that it's actually a beautiful, system. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. The wheel has always been there. Maybe it was stuck on a rock, and now we have to just push it over the rock and it rolls again.
So it's in good shape. I mean,
I don't think it's in good shape. Okay. I try to put a positive tint on it, but I mean, a long time ago when people farmed for their sustenance and they didn't have jobs in town, any little repair that was needed on that system was done right away. It was nipped in the bud. Mm-hmm. And now that we are farmers, when we get off of work at 5 o'clock, those little problems get bigger and more severe. So the overall health of the system, you could question that because we don't have the time or the money to fix it. But the system needs to be used and fixed because it is what connects us back to where we came from. Man and women are of the earth. And you can't lose that connection. And the Aseca and trees and riparian areas are things that remind us subconsciously of that connection. And that's why, hopefully, they've been very generous to us in the past couple of years. This was a great legislative session in New Mexico for water. So we look positively at that. But I mean, the battle isn't over. I mean, it's been a 500-year battle, and maybe it'll go on in the future. And there's always, a new problem on the horizon. But at least, people listening, they might become encouraged to become proactive and active and progressive in these types of activities and associations.